Good. So we were just talking about you and your father in Woodford, and you looking after him, and basically on the what was then the front line.
It ended up because it was getting so severe that we just sat and held hands and said the Lord's Prayer together, and it seemed to help. That night, just round the corner from us, literally, the house was hit, and the whole of the side of the house fell off like a doll's house. And there was a little lady, rather stupidly, who was having a bath upstairs with a sort of mob cap on.
Yeah.
And she was sitting in the bath, completely open to the road. And the fireman had to go up the ladder and get her down. And she, "You can't take me down like this." She could reach a towel, and wrapped her up in a towel with this bath cap, and took her down in a fireman's lift. Poor, never got over it, I don't think. Quite elderly. It was a stupid thing to have done. Gone into the bath.
Got into a bath during an air, yeah.
Probably didn't hear all that. And that always stuck in my mind. But the most frightening thing I ever remember was soon after that, the rockets began falling, and they were scary because they really made you jump because there was no warning. We needed to get a warning when the doodlebugs were coming and you could hear them. But there was no warning because they came from long distance and they just went down with a bang. And one of these fell and ran up the road to the nearest little shop, and they said, I think that was Bancroft School. I've never felt so alone in my life.
No.
I was only 18. I ran all the way, not that very far. And I thought, I can't, this is awful, you know. What am I going to do? Mother's up north. If something's happened to me, what am I going to do? I couldn't bear the thought of it. I got nearer, and there was a lot of, obviously, people, and they stopped me going to me. It wasn't that, but it was fairly near, but not
at
school. There was a warden, and I think he saw how frightened I looked, and he said, "It's all right, miss, it's all right, miss, not school." Oh, dear, it's a quivering mess. I really was frightened, really frightened that day.
It was partial information, kind of inflaming your worst fears, really. So it must have seemed at that time that it was just going to go on forever, I suppose. Yeah. We'd had D-Day, still wasn't finished by any means.
It just seemed to go on forever and ever and ever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We all got fed up with it, didn't we? My friend and I, Pam, used to go to each other's houses in the evening, and we'd try and take any home, but it was difficult with raids. And we'd sit in the shelter, either hers or at mine, and we'd remember all the things that we, nice things we had to eat before the war. I'd think about them. And then we'd go and make what I hated, which was peanut butter sandwich, because there was nothing else really. And this horrible margarine they had, and sort of grey bread with bits in it, which was actually very good for you. Because it wasn't refined in any form.
When you say bits, what do you mean? Sort of just bits of
chaff.
Yeah.
It wasn't refined at all. In actual fact, it's very good for you. It didn't look the white bread, which is so refined, it doesn't do you any good at all.
Right. It's
like eating cotton wool. We would sit there and eat these, and I couldn't bear peanut butter. Stuck to the roof of your mouth.
Yeah, I've never known you eat peanut butter.
Well, I never do. Enough of it.
Prunes for Dad and peanut butter for you. Then.
Mm-hmm.
So what were the things that you were kind of really missing then that you were discussing? That
fruit, I think.
Oh, right.
No bananas, oranges, or nothing that was couldn't grow here.
Plenty of
fruit
apples.
Was definitely a season. Yeah. Yes. We've got lots of those from the orchard. From the monastery. But, just quite simple things, really. My mother being able to make a nice, really nice sponge cake, which she excelled at. couldn't make anything like that. I did make cakes, but it was dried egg, which was quite good. It tended to be a bit...
Yes, I think you were saying the other day you were rationed to one egg per person week.
Well, there wasn't even that then. That was after the war.
Yeah.
You didn't see, you didn't see hen's eggs.
You
just had this dried egg.
So where were the hens presumably didn't stop laying eggs? So
no,
where were
they just turned it into... It was easier to transport, wasn't so easily
I see,
they
made it into
eggs
pat, yeah.
Something that will smash to pieces if a bomb falls near it.
Yes.
Hundreds of eggs will go, whereas with dried stuff, it will be easier to... everything, after the war, the scrambled egg, when eventually we got round to having it, looked very anemic, because it was sort of bright yellow. But you got used to it, and it was very nice. Once you got used to the idea, made quite good cakes. You could make little cakes, you know, which we did twice a week.
What about things like milk and cheese in those days?
There was quite a lot of cheese, but it was all the same cheese. Just great weight blocks, and they'd cut a slab off for you. Didn't have any fancy... Oh, there were little boxes of cheeses, that's all. Well, there was nothing in between. There were no sort of fancy cheeses, not really, didn't come out. Well, not in the towns, anyway. And milk, of course, stopped coming in bottles and was dried.
Right.
That wasn't really very nice. You had to mix that up, otherwise you got lumps in it.
Was the water supply, did that tend to be okay for most of the time? Or
no,
don't go up? Right.
Because there was one of the things that they hit continually was the water mains. So there was no water. You had to go up to a standpipe at the top of the road and have your ration of water and bring it home in whatever container you could find.
So you ration to what, so many gallons? Or
That was always happening.
Yeah.
And that's what happened to grandfather, you see. The water main went and the cellar he was in flooded. It came down the chute. It was a mixture of water and coal dust. Not pretty. You stand up to your neck in that. It won't do you much good. You're always hitting the water mains and the gas mains, of course. Everybody had to turn the gas off quickly. My father was very, very resourceful, though. We had still had a coal fire, which you banked up with what you call slack, and you made sort of cakes of it, so that you put that in at the side of the fire, so that the fire was smaller, but it didn't use so much fuel. And then you had a trivet, and you put saucepans on to steam. And it took rather a long time to cook something, but it cooked. And we had a hay box too that he managed to do it. All these things came out then. He seemed to know how to do so that you could make a meal.
So it was coal rationed as well, did you?
Oh my goodness, yes.
Yeah.
And then you very often couldn't get it. And you'd often have to go down and collect the coal yourself.
Yes, yeah. See a lorry going along a road, yeah. Sitting target, wouldn't it?
Well, there's no petrol for them,
I see,
if you wanted this, if you got onto them, they say, well, if you want a bag of coal, you have to come down for it. I mean, how many housewives can carry a bag of coal?
Exactly.
Not many.
It was sold in 100-weight sacks, wasn't it? Or half 100-weight sacks, but even so, that's
heavy.
Very heavy.
I used to take the wheelbarrow, collect a sack of coal. I'm going to go and collect sticks from the forest, Epping Forest. Didn't have a twig in sight. Twigless forester.
So you're presumably falling back on candlelight quite a lot then in the winter months?
Yes. I frightened myself to death one night because we had a passage which came down and ended, and there was a picture on the wall which of course reflected, and I came down with a candle in a lighty. I thought it was a flipping ghost coming towards me. I frightened myself out of the witch for a minute because my eyes immediately came out as saucers, not as a sister apparition. People were nervous for a little bit on edge, you know. So silly, stupid things like that. We slept in the, before we had the shelter, we slept in the passage. Two mattresses on, with no light in there, of course. And just the kitchen door and the back room door. And a father and mother and Anne and I, because we hadn't got Jane then, in the other side. It was very uncomfortable. Drafty and horrible. Surprising what you get used to.
And so just, well, yes, we had to get used to quite a lot, it sounds like. I mean, if water mains were done, you know, what about the sewage systems and things and toilet facilities? Yeah. Would that stay more or less intact?
As far as we were concerned, we didn't seem to have a lot of trouble with that, but probably people did. But I was just trying, there was another occasion which was rather strange. I was trying to think what it was now. It'll come back to me in a minute. What was the peculiar things happened? The various different sorts of bombs had different effects because landmines blew outwards. So they hit everything sideways and didn't go up. They blew outwards. Which was equally as frightening, and it was what killed one of my friend's brothers. He came home on leave from the front to have a bit of peace, stood at the bus stop to get a bus home, and one of these blasted things came down, and he didn't realise to lie down. If you lay down, you were underneath the blast. But he didn't, and it just sucked his lungs out. Just killed him just outright. What a terrible thing to happen. You've been at the front and you come home and that's what happens to you.
Yeah.
And it's a poor friend. It's heartbroken. He's only about 19 or 20, I think. It's a sort of just misadventure, really. I said, well, how? It didn't seem appear to be a mark on him. But that's what it did. It was the suction. And they were very peculiar. They had the most odd effects. One house that was hit, and there was a row of gas marks, as they always were, hanging on hooks. And all the hooks had been just obliterated, you know. just it all fell on the floor. Such extraordinary things happened. Van remembered it was. Grandpa and I were having supper one, and this was a landmine. We didn't hear them coming. They were silent. They just silently floated down. And then when they hit something, and sometimes they fell into the trees and swayed. And somebody had to take it before it went off or fell off, you know, because you knew it would go. And what should you say? It's gone again. I can't remember how it went off.
You mentioned gas masks, dust smell. So everybody assumed that everybody was going to be dropping gas all over the place. But I don't think there wasn't any gas attack at all, was there?
Not at home front.
No.
They did in the trenches, but not at home.
Did you ever have to wear it, or did you just put it on as a precaution?
We always took it. That was one of the things you had. Have you got your gas mask? Have you got your torchlight? Have you got your own identity card? Because that was important. Because if anything happened to you, then you knew who you were.
Because you carry it around your neck or something?
No, it's a pocket or something that you wear on your... It's a sort of saying, you know, have you got your gas mask? Have you got your torchlight? Have you got your identity card? Yes, right. But where's this one that came down there? Oh, I know what it was. We were sitting having supper, and of course we didn't hear this thing come. Well, fortunately, there weren't any windows, as I say, they were all boarded up, because it was a waste of time in putting glass in again, because it just came out again. And we were sitting in armchairs, and it always reminded me of the story of Pooh and Piglet in the treehouse, because Grandpa was sitting that side, the far side from the window, and I was sitting this way, facing her back to the window. And this thing, you could feel it sucking. And our chairs, his chair was moving on to mine, and mine was crashed into the window backwards at quite a speed and hit. This was as if it hadn't been for the wall, you know, it would have gone on sailing out into the road. It was a very peculiar feeling, being sucked.
So they create a sort of vacuum, then pull out and pull the air out of it.
And we had to watch the fire because it had an adverse effect on the fire, and I had to sort of smother that quickly because I did the sparks and everything and would come out and set light to everything. It just reminded me afterwards of the story of Pooh and Piglet, you know. The chair was moving down. That's exactly what it was like. Large old chair. Oh dear.
So that was a mine. How far away was that? Well, did that land then? That mine was
not quite very near. Mm. As I say, they sucked outwards.
You see.
Anything that was away was kind of like a hoover being put on a small object. Sucked. We laughed about it afterwards, but very peculiar.
So, well, there was nothing by way of entertainment going on, I suppose. Any all public theatres and cinemas, were they?
Well, no, they did. They just took your chance if you wanted to take your chance. One or two that did. There was one big cinema. Walthamstow area, where the whole of the circle fell onto the bottom there, you know. But only people took, if they wanted to take the risk, mostly they closed them if it got bad.
You were taken to the Café de Paris, weren't you, I think?
A week before that was
a
direct hit.
Very lucky, yeah. Yeah, this is a famous West Indian jazz band. They lost nearly all their members in that particular raid. Shortly after that, it seems that there wasn't very much live music going on in London
and
after that.
And Ballet Company, because I wasn't with them then, but that was later. But they went on, and they could hear these bombs coming, and Madame de Valois was on their wings. And one of them looked as if she wanted to falter and not go on, and she got the look from her, and she carried on. You just carry on, you don't stop. Amazing things have happened. And I heard the story, afterwards I read the story of where the Ballet Company got out of Holland. They got there with Sleeping Beauty, had to leave the whole lot, everything, all their clothes and everything, and get out quick, as the Germans came in, just like that, and said, you know, you will cooperate, otherwise there will be trouble. And they had to get out, they had to get a tramp steamer back to England. They had to leave everything behind. Got all the sets for Sleeping Beauty. All the costumes and anything of their own. Just had what they stood up in and their gas masks and things.
Were you writing to anybody who was engaged in the fighting anywhere?
No, I don't think I was, actually. I was probably not old enough to
have
a boyfriend, you know.
No.
The only sort of boyfriend I had was the one that came back from Dunkirk, but he was 20 and seemed quite elderly to me. And he was so badly wounded that he wouldn't be able to go back. A terrible limp. He made a great impression on me, though, coming back from there.
So, tell me about that, because you're just reading a book about it at the moment, aren't you? So, how was that report? How did you get your information about it at the time?
The wires. And of course, the newspapers were full of it. It was a mammoth thing. It was a really big operation there, almost as big as D-Day, because they didn't have the time to organise it. Like they did. The D-Day was organised for years, really, before they were working on that. It was worked out to the last detail, wasn't it? And still went wrong in places. But they had to do that quickly, because to do something about it, to get on. As it would have been just annihilation, really, of the army, anyway.
Was the whole professional army that we had at the time
just back,
tied up there?
Just shoved them. They moved so quickly. Hardly proficient, weren't they?
Well, we were all about Navy and beginning to be a certain air power as well, but the soldiery, the actually land army, was in our blood much, was it, really?
No.
It didn't tend to be as well equipped or as well informed.
No, they weren't. Actually, the First World War, all the three brothers went in the medical corps, two as doctors at the front and one as an orderly.
You
said, well, if they're doing that, you know, and you can't see to be a firing soldier, and he would have fired in the wrong direction. He had terrible eyesight when he was a young man. Got better as he got older. Like James. He puts the glasses up now. Yeah, it's the same thing.
So it was never considered that you needed to be evacuated anywhere. You stayed in that
from the war. Yes, at the beginning, yes. But I said no. I think the best thing she's got so far behind her education is going to be a job for her to keep up.
Yeah.
And he said, I think he had a terrible argument apparently with the headmistress, who had taught my mother in London at Lady Margaret School. And he said, no, I don't think he did undertook to make sure I didn't
slaughter. The fact that you went into further education then meant you weren't you weren't eligible to be evacuated. Is that the case then? Right. Yeah.
It actually worked very well, really.
Yeah.
I was able to argue them out of it. I don't know how, but he did.
Sure.
That was really, I was heading, hopefully, he hoped. There was a big training college for teachers in Kent, and I can't remember the name of it now. I was going to be a history and English teacher. I loved both English and history. Devotedly. And he said, I think that would be a very good idea. But of course I didn't go there. And if the war hadn't come, they would have tried to get me through that. Whether I'd ever achieved enough standard in maths is quite a moot question. I would have needed to have, and I think I was very bad at that. Not arithmetic, you know, but higher mathematics was a complete puzzle to me. Definitely the other things were all right, but not, I just couldn't ever get the hang of it at all.
Well, it's off
to achieve a certain standard, haven't you?
So you were heading to be a primary school teacher, is that what you were going to be doing or something?
I was just teaching history and English.
Right. So why would you need mathematics as well then for that?
Well, I imagine to be basics, you've got to have, you have to have had matric.
Oh, I see.
It's called then, instead of O-levels.
Matriculation,
And then there was the higher schools.
Mm.
You'd have to have achieved that to get into a training college. It was quite a hard taskmaster, Grandpa. Make sure you didn't get good marks. You don't even know why. But he couldn't say very much because he was always very bad at mathematics too. He had the same struggle himself when he came out from the First World War, and he went on his training, had to train to be a, he was a good artist, but he wasn't trained to be a teacher. But he had, he'd been to the Manchester Grammar School, and he got a very good education.
Yeah.
But he had to go back, and he said that was the one thing that really snaffled him, the mathematics. But I think probably it wasn't perhaps required to be such a high standard then, if you weren't actually teaching it, all the sciences.
It's logging itself out. Oh, another 4 minutes to go.
I say when we came back at the end of the war, and then acquired my sister Jane, I can't think of a time that was worse for a child to be born than then.
When was she born? 44.
And that's why I didn't go into the forces, because I got my call-up papers just before she was born. And Grans was really ill afterwards, when they didn't go to hospital in for babies and things. And she was so ill, and he got together with our doctor, and he said, well, we can't do without her at home, but she's got to look after her mother and her sister and the baby.
And the baby, yeah.
She can continue going to evening classes, but this is definitely, she needs to be at home. And he got a lot of speak to him for a bit, because it was so unpatriotic. But as he said, well, you know, your life would have been very different.
Yeah.
All my friends went off, you see. But, you know, in those days, people did what they were told. You know, they didn't argue.
Yeah.
They didn't hold it against them. And my friend Pam, who was in the Wren, said, well, you worked far harder than we ever did. Scrubbing the house out and looking after a baby and helping with the rationing and, you know, still doing your going to evening classes. And
well, it was a constant demand, whereas, you know, if you went into the forces, you know,
it was... What I can say was that it was very good training for me.
Yeah.
I knew how to look after a baby, how to look after a cater on nothing. And, you know, all those things that a lot of people are not equipped for.
So when did all that come to an end? Was that when the end of the war was declared? Did you?
Yes. And then we came back. Eventually, my father had to get have a court case to get them out of this house. We wouldn't go. And we had to go to court for that. Got them out. Went back to college. And things began to... But it was in a terrible state. The house and the garden really broke his heart. They hadn't touched it.
Oh, it was the Sidcup house. Oh, yeah.
It was a lovely garden.
Yeah.
It took Grandpa and I 6 months to get it, even to look anything like a garden anymore. We worked so hard on that. The grass was about 4 foot high and brown at the bottom, you know, horrible.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nothing had been pruned. But at least it was standing. It hadn't been damaged at all.
So you could all move back into your... So you all moved back in to Sidcup.
And then I went back to the Sidcup Art School for about 6 months just to get back into my stride. And then I said to him one evening, look, it's time I went off and got on with earning a living now. I knew if I stayed at home, I'd just be a skivvy. I knew that was going to happen. My mother got so used to having me there to do everything. And you've got to, and he said, no, I agree with you, but I don't think my mother was very happy about it, but he said, right, well, we'll see what we can do. And that's when he wrote to the Arts Council. And that's how I started.
Good. That's exactly where we got to the end of the tape.